to sing this song for the healing of the world.
Welcome to Spirit in Action. My name is Mark Helpsmeet, and each week we bring you visits and conversations with people doing healing work for this world, hearing what they're doing and what inspires them and supports them in doing it. Welcome to Spirit in Action. We have an amazingly creative, thoughtful, and passionate guest with us today for Spirit in Action. Jamie Logan produces media to move our consciousness towards veganism and animal liberation. The wide diversity of video productions Jamie has created is truly impressive, both in the video she created with Jordan Elrick as part of Cave Light Films and in the separate work she has done as Jamie's Corner, which is available on her website, itsjamiescorner.com. Touching on issues like health compassion, animal liberation, environmental issues, and women's lingerie, Jamie finds fruitful ways to move us toward peace and wholeness, along with all of our fellow travelers on this globe. Jamie Logan joins us today via Zoom. Jamie, I'm so pleased to have you here today for Spirit in Action.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm exploring your background on the Zoom call. I see dogs up there. There's cats. Are there other animals I should be seeing?
Yeah. So I'm at my friend's house, and this is her wall of all the pets that she's had over the years. I love animals. Yeah. And so does she.
Which animals are you particularly close to yourself?
Well, I had a dog growing up named Daisy. She just kind of helped open my eyes to the fact that all animals have personalities and souls. And so I don't discriminate. I like them all in their own way. Even the ones like the lions that probably wouldn't show me much mercy, I respect them from afar.
I think the best thing one can do is have relationship. And I think you build that. The way that you do your activist work makes a big difference in terms of people actually seeing the animals. A lot of time we put blinders on and ignore all animals and their personalities, what they need, what they're feeling. We ignore that pretty well. I had a cat for about 2 years at one point. The cat and the girlfriend that I got, the cat and the girlfriend didn't like each other. They would just walk in the room and they'd look at each other and kind of growl at each other.
That's, it was just that time to get rid of the girlfriend.
Well, what happened was one day she was sitting on the couch in my room and the cat, her name was Nikolaya, jumped up on the arm of the couch, jumped onto her lap, peed on her, and took off. This cat definitely had opinions.
Love it. Animals know.
They do. And they know when someone doesn't like them. And at one point in this apartment, had a roommate who did not like the cat. So she would go in his room and pee on his stuff. She very clearly was stating her opinion. She did it never in my room, except on my girlfriend. She never did it in my room. There's a personality, there's knowledge, there's connection, relationship that one could be having. So what got you to be such a lover of animals? Was it that pet that you had as a child, or was there something else? Were you always a vegetarian, a vegan?
Yeah, so I wasn't always vegan growing up. I always called myself an animal lover. I think it was just having my dog, Daisy, who was like a sibling. Like everywhere my brothers and I went, Daisy went too. And she was just such a little personality and just this like unconditional love that you don't find everywhere. It's just as every time I was with Daisy, it was just pure joy, pure happiness, right? And you know, you can learn a lot of things from animals. And it wasn't until I was 13 did I start questioning where my food was coming from and connecting the dots that the food on my plate was coming from animals that weren't that different from Daisy. And I passed by a pig livestock truck on the highway one summer. And I looked in as we were driving by and there were just these pigs crammed inside this big metal truck. It was super hot outside. You could see them panting in there. And I made eye contact with one of the pigs and I just couldn't help but think, what is the difference between those animals and the one that's in the car with me right now? And so that kind of led me down a path of reconnecting the dots a little bit. And I just said, you know what, I'm never eating pigs again. And then I realized, cows aren't so different. And Then ultimately, I went vegetarian and I thought I was doing enough and I'm just going to change my diet and that's it. And what I didn't realize at the time was how the dairy and egg industries result in slaughter as well. So I ended up going vegan in January of 2018. That's just a 30-day Veganuary challenge. Really, in that time, it was about learning and reframing my take on veganism. Like, I thought of it as a diet at first, and then I realized actually it's just a rejection of the idea that animals are here for us. It's a rejection of animal exploitation. So it extends to clothing, it extends to entertainment, it extends to cosmetics and not using other animals and in ways that we, of course, would not want to be used and exploited.
Well, absolutely. How old were you when that you did that?
I was 18.
So, was that part of moving out of your home? When your parents eat one thing, you eat another thing?
Not really. It was like my parents were always very supportive of me being vegetarian because it started with being vegetarian throughout high school. Veganism was just the natural expansion. It was really just like putting the values I already had into action. And nowadays it's like you don't even think about it. Like there's so many good food pretty much anywhere you go, whatever country you're in, and I travel around the world frequently. I've never run into a problem. So my parents were always very understanding and supportive. And in fact, my mom has gone vegan and my dad is pescatarian. I think he'll get there.
I want to talk with you about the wide range of how we interact with other beings on the planet. Some people would call that probably religiously or morally based, and there's certainly an important part of it. My personal belief, by the way, is the way that we look at slavery now, the enslaved people we had in the U.S. back 150 years ago, that we're going to look at people who ate animals that way in another 100 years, if we're still around, if we don't annihilate ourselves. But I don't think people can see that right now, and they can be blind to it. So one of the thought experiments I do is, what would I do, believe, how would I act if I was living in one of the southern states where slavery was common? What would been my attitude towards it when everybody accepts it? It's just what's normal, right? Have you done that kind of experimentation to see where you are in place? I mean, I have a friend, Mandalara, who taught me when a mosquito's on me, I don't want it biting me, taking my blood, right? So I say to it, go to God, and I send it on its way. I do not have a moral conundrum killing a mosquito, although I try and do it with consciousness. What's your attitude towards the wider animal kingdom?
Yeah, it goes to the question of like, where is the line? Where do you draw the line? And I think when it comes to parasites and mosquitoes and self-defense, sure, you have to do what you have to do. I mean, I'm not going to stand there and get eaten alive by mosquitoes. That's a self-defense mechanism. What we're talking about when it comes to forcibly breeding animals, confining them, mutilating them, killing them, when we don't have to anymore for survival, it's completely different. I think it goes back to this idea of intentionally causing harm versus unintentionally. So, like, if I'm walking down the street, I might step on an ant. Of course, I will try to avoid that, but we can't be perfect, but we can reduce where we cause harm and suffering. And veganism, to me, it's like I just see it as the bare minimum, like not purchasing meat, dairy, and egg products or animal skins and furs. When there's other alternatives that are easily accessible, why wouldn't we just choose that option and be intentional about that? There are certain things in our lives where we live in a non-vegan world. We can't really control who has leather seats in their car, like if I'm getting into an Uber or an airplane. But it's about where we can make conscious choices, choosing that kinder alternative. And when it comes to the mosquito thing, like, or an infestation of certain animals in your household, I mean, it's tough. And if somebody had provided me, like, here is a practical, better solution. Instead of killing this mosquito, you can spray this and they will be gone and out of your circle, I would choose that.
Yeah, even then, my thoughts have gone further and have continued on because I have a big picture environmentally as well. And I see us all as part of one big, some people would call it Gaia, but I think this one big picture of all of us as cells in the body of that larger entity, that is how I think of it. And I'm aware that I think there's actually a place for killing. Mosquitoes, certainly. I find it okay. But actually, I've questioned whether our agricultural world is a good place to be. You know, the ravages actually have happened around the world because of agriculture. So when I became vegetarian back in 1976, it was a really rare thing to do. When my dad found out I was vegetarian, his first comment to me was, "So why are you on this stupid diet anyhow?" He grew up on a dairy farm, what can we say? And he's a good guy, but he just did not get it at all. So a little bit deeper on the philosophy, and I think that a lot of your videos help touch on elements of this, and I want to talk about them very shortly. By the way, folks, we are speaking with Jamie Logan. It's jamiescorner.com is the website I'll point you to. The link's on northernspiritradio.org. Just go through a variety of these short clips. For the most part, they're short, sometimes 18 minutes short. So maybe first I should ask you, what were your studies in? How did you become such a masterful producer of films?
I studied journalism and media in school, and I had internships at different media outlets where I edited. That was like my job as my when I was an intern. And I then took these skills when I graduated college and started working for a documentary film company called Cave Light Films. We worked on a couple short documentary projects together over the years that I was there that garnered over 100 million views. And these films told stories surrounding animal rights and animal related topics. It was amazing to work there, to learn there, and I learned storytelling, I learned editing, and so I then took these skill sets into the work that I'm doing now with my own brand and my own videos. And I do try to, like with each video, really have an intention and a message behind them so that you can educate, inspire, and create change is really what I try to use social media for.
You have a handful or two of these videos produced by Cave Light Films. You have them on your website linked. And I watched a few of them to try and get an idea. And I was wondering, before I go into any of the specifics, did you have control over what you were videoing? Were these the ones that you were kind of directing or producing? Or was this someone else?
No, it was myself and the director, Jordan Ehrlich. We created those projects.
But was it your idea, or is Cave Light Films all about veganism?
We also work on tech projects, and most of the income actually comes in from projects related to like informational videos that we'll do for different companies. But the projects that we worked on, these passion projects, had to do with veganism, yes.
Well, I want to talk about a couple of them. One of the videos addresses the Jewish practice annually of killing animals in public, right? And I guess this is probably in New York, not too far from you, right?
It's all over. LA, New York, New Jersey. I mean, really all over the world this happens.
Could you describe what the substance of that practice is and what you did in terms of exposing it?
So around Yom Kippur, the Orthodox Jewish tradition calls for, it's a holiday known as Kapporos, and it's basically a religious slaughter ritual that happens on the public streets, and they ship in hundreds of thousands of birds into New York City. They swing them around their head and supposedly transfer the sins onto the bird and then slit the bird's throat publicly. Then they say that they donate the corpses to the hungry, but we know that they just put them in trash bags and we've documented it. Regardless, it doesn't excuse what they're doing to the animals, even if it was going to whatever poor community that they were supposedly sending it to. But it poses public health threats, it poses animal cruelty issues. And so we created a film that exposed this religious slaughter ritual that happens every year in September.
I imagine that you would get some blowback in doing that kind of video because people are going to see it as being anti-Semitic or something. You're touching the holy place of religion and you can't criticize that. Did you get that kind of blowback?
Not really, from what we saw. It was, I think we had a good mix of interviews. People from within the community had their say, lawmakers, disease experts, activists that were on the ground. So the great thing about documentary work is, I'm not the one speaking. I'm not the one sharing my bias or my views on it. And I try to get a well-rounded scope of interviews so that we can hear the different perspectives and sides. And what was cool is there's a few rabbis that speak out against the practice and that say this is not mandated anywhere in the Talmud. It says that we can actually use coins instead. The idea of tzedakah, the idea of seva, of service and giving, it doesn't have to be with the animal. And so offering that solution is pretty cool. It actually, looking into Jewish religion, it states clearly in the Talmud, it states zar belechayim, which is don't be cruel to animals. And so it shows how they're actually going against their own values blindly without really thinking about it, because we have evidence showing that the birds had broken wings and exposed to extreme weather conditions. And when you're doing this in mass scale, there's just no way to ethically swing a bird around your head and slit their throat. It was an interesting project navigating that. But I think that we should look at longstanding traditions and question them, especially when there's victims. And I don't really care what religion it is.
Can I ask you, can pronounce Hebrew moderately well. I'm kind of impressed because a lot of people can't do that. Do you have some Hebrew, some Jewish background that you?
Yeah, I can read and write Hebrew.
Interesting song that I imagine you don't even know about by Paul Simon. Of course, you'll know Paul Simon, but you're younger enough for me that you probably do not know the song Mother and Child Reunion.
Maybe if I heard it.
It was a popular song, early 70s.
Okay.
And when I really enjoyed it, wasn't till many decades later I found out where the name came from. One of the lines in the song is, I would not give you false hope on this something something day, but the mother and child reunion is only a moment away. Oh, little darling of mine, I just can't believe it's true. So, okay, it wasn't obvious to me what the song was about. It turns out, I saw in an interview with him that it was a dish in a Chinese restaurant, chicken and egg in the dish, mother and child reunion. And all of a sudden, my stomach kind of lurched with that idea.
Wow.
Who would have sung that song happily knowing what it's about?
Interesting. That's a great way to use music to convey a message for sure.
But I imagine almost no one knew what it was about. So that was a strange part of it. I wanted to mention about a couple other of the Cave Light films that I watched a little bit of. One was that I thought was absolutely brilliant was the lingerie protest. Mind you, I don't go around in lingerie very much or at all, actually. But it struck me as so perfect. Actually, at one point when people were worried about Muslim fundamentalists who might blow up planes, one of the things I heard advocated is that women should go on in lingerie, and then those people would not get on the plane and be impure with near those women. But whose concept, where did it come from, the lingerie protests? Where did it happen? It looked to me like it happened in many different countries as well. So tell me a bit about it.
So, I mean, passionate activists around the world will pretty much do anything to get the message out there for the animals. And one of these tactics included lingerie protests. And they started popping up all around the world, from Australia to Japan. We did one in New York, Las Vegas, and various other cities. And so we decided to make a documentary documenting this. It had the kind of controversy, it had the large scale, the spread of this happening. And the storyline behind it was also really interesting, where it tackled questions of bodily autonomy and is this exploitation towards humans or not? And all at the same time, it was fun and lighthearted and seemed to have a really positive effect in the communities where this was going on. But most importantly, it got people thinking about veganism and taking pictures of the signs that the women had, and also showed that like you can be healthy and strong and fit on a plant-based diet. So we made a documentary film about it, and it ended up getting over 10 million views, went pretty viral, and it was, yeah, something where I think it's just kind of goes to show that, look, if mainstream media does not want to cover the devastation of animal agriculture and how many individuals are dying every year and having their throat slit and just how horrible animal products are for our health, like it's hard to get these things in the media. People have to get creative. And that's what they're doing. And I think PETA does a good job at this as well, with the controversial kind of like, I'd rather go naked than wear fur campaigns. And we look at like what the meat industry does to sell their products. And look, sex sells. It does. And it captures people's attention right away. And so these protests were playing off of that. And so the film does a nice job at navigating that concept.
One of the facets of the film, again, in the lingerie protest, was a woman, I believe, from Japan, who made the comment that because of they might actually be endangered by wearing lingerie in public, and that therefore they had to find an alternative. So they went in Santa outfits, and that kind of achieved the same thing.
Yeah.
Do you know if that had as large an effect as, I mean, sex sells, right? In our culture, very much. And in different cultures, as I was a Peace Corps volunteer in West Africa for 2 years in a village where it was perfectly acceptable for a woman to go topless, but you wouldn't expose your legs because that's about sex, right? So there's different standards, different places. And so in Japan, evidently, lingerie would just be dangerous for you. Was it effective to have Santa costumes?
Yeah, I think they had to just play based off of their location. And I think that they were still sexy costumes. It still had that same draw. Culturally speaking, they had to do what they had to do. I mean, I would agree that getting arrested and going to jail for however long for putting on lingerie would not be ideal, because then you can't be out advocating for the animal. So they had to do it in their own creative way.
You certainly must have heard one time or another about Lady Godiva,
Yeah.
who she got her point across by nakedness. Actually, early Quakers in the 1600s, I'm talking, they were trying to get across the message that we had to bare our souls. And so some of them went around naked, saying naked before God. And there's a whole way of getting a message across. And, you know, Quakers were pretty saintly people in many ways. So therefore, exposing flesh was not intuitive. And some people, of course, had different attitudes about it. Was there negative blowback? I think in the film, it talks a little bit about the people who were like, oh, this is shameful.
Yeah, definitely. I think with anything controversial, you're going to get the negative and positive feedback. And that's the beauty of it, is that we can have these conversations. And I think that it's really great to hear other perspectives. And just as an activist myself, I'm totally open to admitting that I don't know everything, and that I'm just trying out different tactics to see what might work, what might get media attention. And ultimately, like, if I knew what the right thing to do was, like, we'd see a more peaceful vegan world. But really, the filmmaking aspect of this was about just documenting the history of this movement and telling these stories. I think that we should look at other social justice movements and look at their tactics and see what was working for them. And I think playing off of this sex sells concept can be very effective. And so recognizing maybe the positives and the negatives with it is great.
One of the films that you have there, and again, these are Cave Light films, which is not just you, it's you in collaboration with Jordan, was what happened to Regan Russell. She's run over by a truck when she was doing one of her protests. Your videos did include videos of other people commenting about the protesters, not positively. I thought that was real useful, but it also, I'm hoping it dug into people's hearts in that, you know, oh, you know what they're doing? They're watering those animals, giving them water, stopping the trucks and giving them water and inconveniencing us for 2 minutes. And I really don't, well, particularly considering our national government at this point, people are so good at ignoring the relative importance
Right.
So again, Reagan is killed by this truck. He won't stop, and she's not getting out of the way. I don't know if she stumbled. I'm not sure of all the details, but just as happened with the ICE protests in Minneapolis, the couple people who've been killed there specifically, some people just justify it. Oh, they shouldn't be aggravating other people. Oh, they shouldn't be interfering with the law. What they're doing is illegal. I assume a number of people have tried to tarnish the reputations of anyone who's protesting our slaughter system.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just deflection at its finest, really. And it takes away from what happened. I mean, Regan Russell was giving water to animals before they were taken inside the slaughterhouse. And the truck driver did not like this and stepped on the gas and ran her over. And her story should be told, and that's why we documented it. She still has not seen justice. Her family has not seen justice. At least we can use her story to raise awareness for the animals, just as she would have wanted, to expose what's happening and just how these systems will go as far as running somebody over to keep the truth hidden and silenced. Yeah, it was a very emotional, devastating film to work on. But I think that being able to tell her story was something that it was, I felt like, the least that we could do.
Folks, we're going to dig in deeper here with Jamie Logan. Her website, it's jamiescorner.com. I have to point out, Jamie is spelled J-A-M-I-E, because I have a stepson whose name is Jamie, J-A-I-M-E. As in the French word j'aime, I like. So the link, in any case, especially if you're spelling challenged, is on northernspiritradio.org, where we have links to all of our guests of the past 20 plus years, both for Spirit in Action and our Song of the Soul program. Please come and visit and open your eyes. Find people doing world healing work, which is what Jamie's aiming at here. And so please do visit and follow up with those folks. Remember to post a comment when you visit. Make it a dialogue, not a monologue. I can get tired of my own voice, and your voices, at least your comments and further direction where we should be going, are helpful. Please do join us. No one can do it alone. I think we do our best work when we do it in community. You can also support us. We do this by donations, and we have specifically chosen not to have sponsorship donations funding from corporations or for government, because those things always come with strings attached. So we depend on you, our listeners, to support us. Again, northernspiritradio.org. Also check out the 37, I think as of this week, 38 stations that carry our programs nationwide in many different communities. So please support those folks doing good work with the local communities, and support Jamie Logan. How do you fund your work? How does this work that you're able to produce this? This is a lot of work. I mean, having done this for so many years, I'm very aware of how much work it can be. How do you afford it?
Yeah, it's always a struggle, I will say. So donations help. Patreon is an account that I have set up so people can do like $5 a month, and it goes towards wheat pasting campaigns. It goes towards organizing things like the Animal Rights March in New York City. It goes towards editing, and I mostly do all of my own editing, so that saves costs. Where I can, I'm able to hire out. But yeah, it's a lot. And I also teach yoga, and I have I'll work with organizations on campaigns. And if they do an undercover investigation, they might hire me to help amplify the message by doing street interviews and showing the footage on the streets and things like that. You know, we make it work.
Do you think it's exploitation of animals to do downward dog? My wife's a yoga teacher as well.
Oh, nice.
Has been doing it for decades. And
nice.
As a matter of fact, she's probably downstairs right now doing her workout. So what I hear you saying is, with support of some people, is this with the support of 10,000 people, or is it 5 people? Or, I mean, obviously you have some of the best friends in the world, but do you get enough support to make a difference?
Yeah. I mean, I do what I can with the money that I receive. And it's, you know, one of those things where the more that's coming in, the more impact that can be made. But I am very, very careful about how and where I spend it. And I know that, like, whenever somebody is donating, that I will make sure that it goes a long way.
So, how many people collaborate with you? Is there also a group? I mean, you mentioned PETA, other things. As I said, I think we're stronger in community. And if we have community that has very strong bonds, we can do so much better than we can do individually. And I'm not ignoring the beauty and the inspiration of individuals, but Martin Luther King would have been nothing without a community around him, right? And Gandhi, as inspirational as he was, and he is one of the people I revere, including his flaws. I think that having community and finding a way to work together makes a difference. How do you do that in your case? And what kind of folks do you associate with regularly? Where do you get your engine topped up?
Pretty much all of my work is collaborative. I don't consider any of it at an individual level. Even when I record my street interviews and I post and it's just a video of me, the community is then what goes on to help share it and get it out there to the public. So I see all of it as teamwork, and I work with many animal rights organizations, Animal Outlook, PETA, Mercy for Animals. I work with Jiva Mukti Yoga, which promotes veganism as one of its core tenets. I could name, I mean, on and on and on, but the main thing is that they promote an animal liberation message as opposed to animal welfare. I do not want bigger cages or longer chains. I want liberation. And I think that's a clear distinction to make. I think a lot of welfare campaigns set us back in many ways from financially, a lot of the money goes there, and it's just very minor, minimal progress for animals. And I think it tricks the public into believing that what we're doing to them is okay. And I think on another level, it sets us back mentally, just like when we think about these concepts, we're trying to find the right way to do the wrong thing. So I'm very, like, careful of who I align with when it comes to messaging.
In the spirit of self-disclosure, I hope you won't hang up on me when I mention to you, I'm not vegan. I'm vegetarian. And I did do vegan for 3.5 months at one point. I certainly could do that. It's not a problem that way. I actually have chickens here. There's three hens right over there, and I could introduce you to them. You get to know them. One of the reasons that I have them, it's not because it's cheaper. In fact, because I feed them fresh greens year round, I'm in fact spending a lot more on them than I would be if I just went to the store and bought some eggs, right? And I do associate with the chickens. I know them as individuals. So I actually find this kind of relationship a good one. And I think it improves how we relate to animals, just the same way that having a pet means you care about it. There's countries where dogs are not pets. And matter of fact, I have a sister-in-law who's from Malaysia, and she came to the U.S. with great fear of dogs. And now she loves the two dogs that they have at their house. So I actually think it's really important to have animals present in your life in order to change your relationship, to see them as individuals.
Right. I agree. I think we should see them as individuals and not look at what we can get from them, but instead to recognize them as individuals that deserve to be here just like we do. And when it comes to backyard chickens and whatnot, oh my God, what are you doing up here? When it
Who is
comes
this? Could you introduce us to your neighbor there?
to this is Little Man. He's my friend's dog, and he wants love, right? We're talking about animals. And yeah, like when we look at just, there's multiple levels of exploitation. There's ones where we're mutilating animals and cutting their tails off and pulling their teeth out to confine them in small factory farms. And then there's levels where they are in our backyards producing eggs for us. And I encourage people to think of it as a relationship that doesn't necessarily have us look at what the other can do for us, but instead just actually see them as the individual. That's why I love sanctuaries who they rescue hens from these industries and they actually feed the eggs back to the birds, because when they lay the eggs, they deplete so much calcium that it's healthy to actually feed them the eggs back. the shell and all, and they love it.
And we do that with the, of course, the shells from our chickens. We don't give them the eggs back. And in part, the concern is we don't want them to become cannibals, in essence. In fact, our eggshells, I actually cook them and crumble them up so they will not resemble the fresh thing.
But they're not fertilized.
Well, they're not in this case. We did have a rooster for a while, but a weasel got him. And to his credit, his name was Licorice. He fought off that weasel. I saw it happen when the weasel attacked. I ran out. The weasel took off right away. But in this case, Licorice was wounded in one leg, and it took him 22 days to die. But again, I have a relationship there, and I'm pretty sure that the lives of my chickens are a lot better than they'd be at this here in Wisconsin in winter. I don't know what they do in winter.
Where did you get the chickens?
Three different places, actually. We have a son who raises, he gets chicks in the spring and raises them and gives us a few usually. Some came from some Amish farmers around here. So a variety of places. And one rooster came to us from some folks who were living in Minneapolis, and they can't have roosters in city limits, that kind of thing. They had to get rid of them somewhere so they could come here and finish off their life. I have a friend who's over in Oregon who had a chicken that was, I think, 8 and a half, 9 years before she died, which is incredibly old for a chicken. And but of course, you know, it's not about killing them. We try and, of course, they live out their lives. That's how I would do it.
Yeah, that's at least you're not sending them to slaughter when their egg production slows. I think vegans oftentimes find fault with the backyard eggs because all of those hens are coming from the industry. And what the industry does is every one of these birds is hatched in a hatchery, or their parents or the chickens before that came from a hatchery, which is where male baby chicks are ground up alive on the first day of life. And so if you're not rescuing the hen, and you're funding this breeding of the animals, it's tricky. I just think that, like, when we have so many alternatives nowadays, from just egg to tofu scrambles, truly not using animals to when we don't need them to as far as is practically possible.
You were mentioning visiting animal sanctuary. I assume you might be talking about the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. Are there other sanctuaries you visited? How widespread are they?
Yeah, there's, I mean, dozens of them. I visit Catskills, Woodstock, Skylands, Tamarlin are just some of the ones in the New York region that I go to, but there's a bunch all over the country, actually, and outside of the country that are doing amazing work. I mean, unfortunately, we've created the problem by breeding these animals into existence in the first place. And now, where we can, these sanctuaries rescue them and almost use them as like ambassadors to show the public, well, these are the victims behind the food system, behind the meat industry, behind the dairy industry, behind the egg industry. These are the animals that would have ended up on your plate, and all of them would have had their throat slit in both the dairy and the egg industries as well.
I want to go into a little bit of depth about what the real issue is here. First of all, I'll give you some of my background. Of course, I'm Quaker, which has its own sense of connection wider. There's the light of God in everyone, all that kind of thing. One of the phrases I got introduced to about 20 years ago was a question about measuring how liberal and conservative you are by how big your circle of we is. Who is we? Who are we concerned about, right? And so some people are concerned about people in their town, only of their religion, of their skin color. We don't have to be concerned about someone who's of a different religion and lives in Iran, for instance. We don't care about those people, right? Or it might be that we don't care about the animal, or we don't care about the trees around us. I have a friend who, whenever he sees a tree being cut down, he weeps. The level of compassion that we have, the size of our circle of we, varies quite a bit. And I'm not sure there's one single truth. But what I do think is fundamental, Quakers have this principle called simplicity. And for me, part of that includes living as low on the food chain as possible. So we don't have to have this animal eats this animal eats this animal, this plant just yeah. going up there, concentrating pesticides and everything else, right? But in looking at the problems with the exploitation of animals, the killing of them, I think the thing that really makes it evil, in my opinion, is greed. Greed, selfishness. All I care about is what I can get out of it. And I happen to like the taste of meat. I just don't eat it, right?
Yeah, we all did.
Yeah. And well, not everyone. I've known people who never liked meat. And so there are exceptions. And
it's the seasoning that you put on it, really. Yeah, I think it's more so like ask the victim, right? Like from the victim's point of view, it is black and white. Whether it is done in the like nicest, most quietest environment, you know, you killed them on the local farm, or whether it's done in an industrial plant, the victim, from the victim's point of view, taking their life away is evil, whether it's greedy or not. Like if it's done to one animal versus if it's done to 500 animal, it's still murder. It's still killing and torture. And so I try to look at it as like, yes, we shouldn't be greedy, but we shouldn't be doing the killing in the first place at all.
I started having chickens back in 2014, and I've seen a lot of chickens go by, and they get killed. They don't get killed by me. They sometimes die of their own problems, whatever that is, but mostly they're killed by other animals. The biggest problem I've had is with a neighbor's dog, because I want my chickens to wander free on the countryside. And the dog will come over here. Sometimes will get loose from where he's constricted. And in a matter of a couple minutes, he'll kill 5 of my 7 chickens, right? He just comes, kills, goes on to the next. The raccoons are an issue. There's been foxes. I told you about the weasel. So I do think that all of us will die, including chickens. The problem from my point of view is, again, as I said, is greed. Do I care about the welfare of the others? As I said, I think my chickens have a much better life than chickens in the wild have. And I think they would willingly wander out on the countryside and be killed by other animals, and they would have very short lives here.
We've also bred them to be domesticated animals. They're sure. No longer the ancestors that they once were. Chickens were once wild. They're not actually how we've bred them to be nowadays, where they grow up in 42 days and they're ready for slaughter weight. So it's like we can talk all day long about, oh, the food chain circle of life, the dog attacks the chicken, the lion eats the zebra. Those are the lion with the zebra situation is a survival thing. And we as humans possess this moral compass where we know better. We do not have to use animals to at all nowadays. We don't have to.
I agree.
The lion has to do it maybe because they're to eat, and that I'm not going to stand there. And I mean, maybe let's focus on us first, and then we can figure out what to do with the carnivorous animals afterwards.
Well, actually, I don't think that's the correct thing to do, because that could be just pushing it a bit down the road. It's like I could set my chickens free and watch them die in a day, but I'm free of any guilt because I pushed them away. I try to think about these things systemically. I also, the area where I live, there's lots of deer wandering around here. And of course, there's hunting season in November. Obviously, I don't participate in that, and I hate to watch it. But on the other hand, I've also watched the damage that happens with deer because cars run into them, and the damage that they do to our garden.
Well, we've taken away their land. We've taken away their land, and we wonder why they wander into the streets.
Well, actually, what we did especially was take away their predators.
Yeah, too.
And so if their predators were here, the numbers would probably be more balanced. But we don't want the predators here, too, because they're a danger to us as well. So it's big picture things like that. And again, what I come back to is greed. Is it selfish greed that ignores the well-being of others? That is what I have a problem with. Of course, so much of our lives, it's like, hey, I get to play my games on the computer, or I get to drive and visit anybody I want to so I can pollute the air. Greed is a big issue, and it's complicated. I haven't spent time in India, but I would love to, because, you know, half the country there is vegetarian. And the transition that happened when they stopped eating cows and they treat them as sacred individuals, for me, I then wonder why India still participates in so many wars or has in the past done that. So I really want to get this to be a peaceful world where we care about each other, the connections there. And I think vegetarianism and then maybe veganism are a movement in that direction. So I'm supportive that way. And I'm still trying to look beyond to see what the next step is. Why is India not a peaceful country in the same way that it should be?
India has the largest exporter of beef and leather. India has a huge dairy industry. Huge. Baby cows separated from their mothers. Male babies are slaughtered across borders in states where it's legal in India. It's a massive industry. Cows roam around eating trash. Stray dogs and cats get hit by cars. It's just out in the open. I mean, I just got back from India last week. It's certainly, they might, you know, in the Hindu religion, worship the cow. I question, how can we impregnate them and take their babies and then release them on the street where they have nothing to eat? How does that relate to a form of worship? The dairy is a huge problem in India, and it's no surprise that they are the number one exporter of leather and beef. And then we wonder why there's wars. I really do believe that the root of all evil, it stems from the fact that some lives matter less, as MLK said, and that veganism at its core is like the first form of oppression that we're taught. So I believe that if we can look at animals not as resources for us, but instead as earthlings that belong here just like us, we can reduce the amount of wars. We can finally see peace, because as long as slaughterhouses are open, there will never be peace on this earth.
I can see why you say that. Again, I wrestle with many complexities. I did interview Melanie Joy.
Yeah.
A couple times, actually. And I love her insights, the understanding of what enables us to do this. By the way, in the area of Togo where I lived, this is in West Africa, in one part of the country, one of the tribal areas, they would have dogs as pets, but cats were just considered food. In the opposite end of the country, it's kind of a long, thin country about the size of New Jersey, they would have cats as pets, but they would eat dogs. And about 10% of the population of the country at the time I was there were Muslims. So of course, they didn't eat pigs. And so I tried to explain to people why I was a vegetarian, because they were so envious. You are a rich person. You can eat meat anytime you want to, and yet you choose not to. And when I said, well, you know, these people don't eat dogs, these people don't eat cats, these people don't eat pigs, I'm part of the super religion, I don't eat any of them. And then they said, oh, okay, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That was the way I found to explain it to them, that actually carried something in the heart for them.
I love that. Yeah.
But it's hard, because I also know the horrible things that agriculture does to our lands, the monocrop, all of that kind of thing. Each time I eat rice.
70% of soy is given to the farmed animals. So it's not really the agriculture for humans that's the problem. It's the amount of food that we're growing to feed 80 billion plus farmed animals. That's the problem. We could feed the world 10 times over on a plant-based diet. We could end world hunger today with just the resources we have. But instead, we're using monocrops and we're destroying the planet with agriculture just to feed the animals that we end up killing.
Which is one of the reasons that I've gotten into foraging, right? One of the things you can do is you can have an oak tree in front of your house that drops its acorns and you process them, which I do each year, right? You should try my wild rice acorn burger recipe and enjoy yourself quite a bit.
As long as there's no dairy and eggs in there.
Of course, I understand that. Yeah, there's actually a Native American acorn bread that I found the recipe for that I also use, which, of course, and they weren't raising livestock in the same way that we do back 300 years ago. Anyway, there's a lot of ways we can do that. And once I started connecting, I know where the oak trees are around me, just as I know the animals, just as I know where the ramps grows up. And by knowing all those things, all of a sudden, the things that I know that I have in my life are the ones I care about. And again, greed is what I think is the big overall problem. You know, one of my fears, and of course, this is not something that you have to solve. I'm so grateful that you're producing your videos, which are helping people look at something that is not they don't do self-examination, right? And fortunately, if people go to itsjamiescorner.com and they watch some of your videos, they're going to learn about all kinds of aspects. My big question for you is, Jamie, how do you measure your effectiveness?
Mm-hmm.
How do you know you've been effective? You've got some press, you've got shares going on. I assume you've got people yelling at you and you've got some people saying, huh, can I join you? I think I need to change.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's something I think people in the advocacy space are always navigating. For me, I think we also need to look not just at quantity of like the amount of people we're reaching with our content, but also quality and how that is actually changing or affecting people. So I get a lot of messages and emails from people saying that they're going vegan and that this is, you know, something they need to look further into. And also, I think that we need to look at, like, I try to diversify my reach and like I speak in schools and trying out different forms of activism, seeing like where it's most effective is something where even if I don't see the end of factory farming in my lifetime or animal liberation in my lifetime, it doesn't change the actions that I'm taking today and the urgency of the activism that I'm doing. I can't control what the outcome is, but I'm doing my best in the action. And that's really what I try to focus on and just approach each video I make, each action I take out on the streets with activism as urgent and as serious as the issue needs.
About how often do you produce your videos?
Well, for social media, I put out at least 5 times a week. But for like the documentary films, we did 6 over the course of like 2.5 years.
That's incredible productivity. 6 videos to capture something that's transformative, that helps move things in the right direction. It's not easy. I mean, I do produce 2 programs a week and I realize how much work it is. So why isn't your hair more gray or something like that?
Working on it. I'm 27, so it's probably at this rate.
I do want to honor your hard work. I mean, I love when people step forward to make the world a better place, given from their heart, trading off some comforts and convenience that they would have. I respect that deeply. And I know you're doing something good for the world. I'm just hoping the world's responding.
Yeah, slowly but surely.
I know when I became vegetarian in 76, you have no idea. I didn't know but one other person who had been vegetarian for a little while. I knew not a single other vegetarian. So it's so very different now. And we watch the changes happen. And are you actually seeing the changes happen that you can say, well, the world's better when I was only a tender youth of 18 and became vegan? Have you seen the change happen or not?
I don't know. It depends what you look at, you know, in terms of the amount of animals being killed every year, it's still going up. I think, you know, as I said in the beginning of this, it's like, it's a collaborative effort. So I don't see it as my actions have impacted this. Like, I think I'm just trying to inspire more people to speak up and together we can create the change. And I've noticed, yeah, changes within like my circles, my friend groups, people online. I think we have more understanding of like plant-based being healthy and how toxic red meat and animal products can be for people's health, thanks to documentaries like Kip Anderson's What the Health and some of the other docs like Netflix put on a Live to 100 documentary and Forks Over Knives. There's so many that even books as well that have really helped to push the needle. So, you know, we got to know where our strong suits are. And I think for me, it's like, reaching a younger audience, making the content fun and engaging is where I can make a difference and have impact and, you know, trying my best. So we'll see.
I admire your dedication, your changing that you're bringing about. And I'm really thankful that you took all this time to sit with me here today for Spirit in Action.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark. And thanks for everybody who listened in today.
And remember, her website is itsjamiescorner.com. Any question, come via nordenspiritradio.org. Watch her videos, watch the movies that she's been part of producing, and put your foot forward to make the next step. It may be a small step or a large step, but I'm sure Jamie will have insights to help you move along to the better place in this world. Thanks again, Jamie.
Thank you so much.
The links are on nordenspiritradio.org. Please join us again next week for Spirit in Action. The theme music for this program is Turning of the World, performed by Sarah Thompson. Check out all things Spirit in Action on northernspiritradio.org. Guests, links, stations, and a place for your feedback, suggestions, and support. Thanks for listening. I'm Mark Helpsmeet, and I hope you find deep roots to support you to grow steadily toward the light. This is Spirit in Action.
With every voice, with every song, we will move this world along, and our lives will feel the echo.